Hi everyone. Welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. This is Swanik Jaikumar. And, as you know, in this podcast series we try to examine different professions and career paths by talking to experts in those fields. If you're new to this podcast, I encourage you to listen to the introduction episode to get an idea for what this podcast is about. Today's guest is Mr. Mitchell Muncy, an independent business strategy consultant and principal at his own company, Prospera LLC. Thank you for your time, Mr. Muncy. Let's jump right into the questions.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Muncy. Thank you for joining us today. We're just going
to... Oh, my pleasure.
As a high school student, understanding various professions and career paths seems to be a daunting task because there are so many choices available. And even if we hear about something, the exposure we get to these careers is very limited. I would like to take you back to your high school days when you were thinking about college, your career, etc. I'm assuming that you probably started like me with a bit of confusion and uncertainty in choosing the right path. And after a few years, you have a successful career today. So I'm sure you learned a lot during this journey, and this interview's purpose is just to gain some of the understanding that you gained. So the first question is, when you were in high school, did you know what kind of career you wanted to venture into?
Well, I was interested in both medical school and law school. That was about as far as I got. My mother was an attorney, and I was very interested in science. So those seemed like appealing possible careers for me. I suppose I didn't give it a great deal of thought just beyond, you know, my schoolwork. But I would never have guessed that I would be doing the kind of work I'm doing now.
Okay. Now you are a consultant. How did you come into this area? And like, were there anybody that influenced you or brought you into that area?
Yeah, well, it's kind of strange how this happened. So I graduated from St. Mark's and went to Princeton. And while I was there, I decided I didn't want to go to medical school. And I ended up taking my degree in romance languages. And so I thought, well, I might go to graduate school and teach French literature. And I started off the PhD program at New York University, which was a complete disaster. And in retrospect, it's one of those decisions where I have to admit, I kind of knew ahead of time that this wasn't going to work out. But after a semester of that, I thought, well, this is ridiculous. I'm just going to go get a job. And so I went to work for an educational organization, and the staff was still pretty small. I was the conference director, and so I had a fair amount of responsibility for somebody my age, and I was really forced to kind of learn how to do things on my own. But I also got some editorial experience there as well, because the foundation published a couple of scholarly journals. And so when I decided to return to graduate school, this time in philosophy, I took a job at a magazine as an editor, just to kind of pay my expenses during graduate school. And after 3.5 years of that, I ended up as the managing editor of the magazine, even though I was in school the whole time. And so I decided that actually I enjoyed this work very much. I enjoyed the management aspect of it as well as the editing aspect. And so I thought, well, the prospects for this are probably better than teaching philosophy at the university level. So I had the opportunity to start a publishing company with a book publishing company with a friend of mine who was putting up the capital for it. And what I discovered over the 12 years that I worked there was that I actually had a fairly high risk tolerance for business startups, and that I actually enjoyed this work, you know, very much. And so when I finished my time there, I went to become a chief operating officer of a think tank in New York City, where I was just doing general management all the time. And that was in 2008. And over the next 10 years, I was either number two or executive director at a series of nonprofits. And over that period of time, I realized I was developing a kind of distinctive approach to management because I had both for-profit and nonprofit experience. And I'd spent a lot of time working directly with boards. And so that's when I decided to start my own consultancy, which I've now been doing for 6 years. And I work mainly with nonprofits and small businesses. But the thing is, each step in itself made sense. But over 30 years, they have carried me very far from what I thought I might be doing when I was a junior at St. Mark's.
This question is going to take a little bit of a step back to like the end of high school. What were the influencing factors that you considered when choosing college? Which college specifically?
Well, I can't really claim to anything very elevated here. I was at St. Mark's all 12 years. And I was always in the top part of the class. And as you very well know, I mean, the expectation there is kind of, well, if you're in the top part of the class, you're going to go to an elite school, right? And I loved growing up in Dallas and had a great relationship with my family, I had also thought, well, it'd probably be good for me to go to school away somewhere and just get some experience of living elsewhere. So I only applied to one school in Texas, which was the University of Dallas. The other schools I applied to, it was just your basic list of elite schools: Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Williams, Amherst. Can't remember if there was anywhere else, but I got in everywhere except Yale, where I was waitlisted. And so then it came time to visit schools. And so my parents and I went around and visited all these places except Princeton. my response to every campus I went to was sort of lukewarm to, I really hate this place. I think it was late in my junior year at St. Mark's or my senior year, the dean of admissions of, I think it was Williams, came to speak at St. Mark's and he said to us, you might not believe me about this, but it's really important that you go to school somewhere where when you wake up in the morning, you say to yourself, I'm really glad I'm here. And I didn't see how true that was till I got to college, but I hadn't really liked anywhere we'd visited that much. My mother happens to go on a business trip to Philadelphia and went up to visit Princeton just by herself. I couldn't go with her at that time while she was there. And she came back and she said, I think this is the kind of place you would like. And after I got in, Princeton has this really fabulous alumni network. And the big Dallas Fort Worth alumni club. And as soon as I was admitted, I was getting, to invite lunches, parties. I was a fencer. The fencing coach at Princeton knew my coach in Dallas and called me up and said, I want you to come here and fence with me. And so I mean, it was just kind of being sort of love bombed by Princeton. I thought, okay, I didn't visit there, but this seems pretty great. And so I'll go to school there. And, as my 18-year-old self, I'm afraid that's about as advanced as my thinking. My thinking was, although I would say in retrospect, it turned out to be a great choice. I loved every minute I spent there. I had a great time. And I would definitely go again. Here's one thing. Actually, I'll tell you one funny thing that happened, particularly at St. Mark's. It was actually quite influential on my decision, now that I think about it. Up until my junior year at St. Mark's, the college counseling office there was not really a big deal. And that may be hard to believe now, but like 35 and 40 years ago, even at a place like St. Mark's, the school just didn't put that much into the college counseling. And they usually just had a faculty member who kind of did it on the side. And so, you know, I went in for my first meeting my junior year with my parents to the faculty member who was handling it. Perfectly nice guy. But we came out of there thinking, oh, we can't expect anything from this fellow. I mean, he's, you know, he's teaching a full load and he's trying to get, you know, 70 people into college. Like, this is just not, you know, we're on our own. I mean, it was fine. We weren't upset. It's like, okay. Well, the next year, they decided, the school, the man who was headmaster at the time, decided to take college admissions more seriously. And they hired a guy named Paul Mott, who actually went on to be CEO of the Common App, from Dartmouth, where he was a senior admissions officer at the time, to come be the college counselor at St. Mark's full time. And it was incredible what a difference this made. And, you know, I do give him a fair amount of credit, because he was just laser focused on, especially for the higher ranking students in the class, just laser focused on the process, which he knew, of course, from the college end. And that ended up being a pretty big help.
Okay, so now you're in the consulting world and you're in the business mm-hmm. world. What skills have you developed that are really helpful in that world, and how did you develop them?
Yeah, well, I mean, two things I would say, well, one thing in particular is curiosity, right? When you're consulting with an organization, for profit or nonprofit, you know, the chances that they really know what their problem is are the same as the chance that you know what your problem is when you go to the doctor. Right. You go to the doctor, you say, you know, my back hurts. But you then don't tell the doctor, my back hurts. And, you know, here's what's wrong with me. And so here's the treatment I want you to prescribe. Right. No, I mean, no one would do that. Right. And it's the same in the organizational world, because organizations are like small societies. They're complex adaptive systems. And it's hard to figure out what the source of the difficulty is, and the service that a consultant provides is the kind of outside, impartial view of what's going on. So the first step is always to be curious and to do the research, and particularly interviewing, to figure out what is really the client's difficulty. And to always be learning more about the organization and more about your profession. Now, the other thing too that I would say in my case is extremely helpful is if you have prior experience as an executive, either a chief executive officer or a chief operating officer, is an enormous help when consulting, when doing the kind of consulting that I do, which is sort of general management and strategy consulting, because I have the experience of doing the jobs that I'm now advising people on how to do. And that is often not the case for consultants. And so I'd say, you know, a long experience working in a variety of functions, there's hardly any organizational function that I have not personally done. And so, you know, I encourage people to just get a very, very broad experience and to learn to be very curious about what they're doing. You know, if they ever ask themselves, I wonder why such and such is the case, always follow that intuition and go and find out.
In college, other than your studies, how did you prepare mm-hmm. yourself to take up the world? Sort of?
Well, I mean, as a professional, just thinking about professional life, I did a lot of volunteer work with the Alumni Council at Princeton as an undergraduate, both kind of intern type work, although I didn't have an internship, it was more volunteer work, but then also serving on some alumni committees. And I mean, part of the reason that I did that was, as I mentioned earlier, I had been very impressed by the alumni I had met while I was applying and deciding where to go to school. But I also had the sense that that would be a great way to begin getting some good professional formation across a wide number of fields. So that was one thing that I spent quite a bit of time on. Otherwise, I mean, I will just say that one particular thing that happened at college that I wasn't necessarily expecting is I was raised Catholic. I went to Christ the King Parish in Dallas, if you know where that is, on Northwest Highway. When I went to college, I happened to encounter a really rich Catholic community there that had a very adult approach. Adult and practical approach to living the faith in the middle of one's ordinary life. And that also was made a huge difference for me after I graduated.
Yeah. So were there any big obstacles you had to overcome in your career? Was there like a hardest point in your path to get to where you are now?
Well, all of my biggest obstacles have been self-inflicted. It's my own bad decisions were the main obstacle which I've had to overcome. I mean, as I mentioned, the decision to go right out of college into the French program at NYU it's just a terrible decision. Even now I think about it and I just can't imagine why I did that. One thing I would say in about my career is that I have had a tendency to stick around a little bit too long in jobs that I got comfortable in. And, I don't know that I suffered any serious harm because of that, but looking back, I can see that it wasn't good and that I needed to have a little bit more self-knowledge about when there was no longer a fit between what I wanted to do and the organization I was working for. I would say really it's just, my own limitations have been the main obstacles.
What advice do you have for someone in their junior or senior year of high school with both relation to like choosing colleges first of all and also like how to choose what major particularly they want to pursue?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing I would say, so I have six children, five of whom are in college or beyond. So in the last particularly 5 or 6 years, I've had a fair amount of experience with helping my own children think about college. And I mean, one thing that I would say is to repeat what that dean from Williams said that I mentioned a little while ago, which is that it's very important to go somewhere that you are really glad to be. I knew a lot of people in college. I know some young people now who have picked schools based on their ambition or their family's ambition or the reputation of the school, and they kind of a superficial contact with it, and they've gone and have been unhappy with it. So that's the first thing I would say. And the second thing I would say is to be open to where your interests are leading you. All right. I mean, as I said before, I never would have guessed in high school that I would be doing the kind of work I'm doing now. I probably wouldn't have even understood what it means to be doing this kind of work. I'm not sure I would have known what it is. When I was growing up, I knew a lot of lawyers because my mother was a lawyer. I didn't know any consultants. and also not to think that what you're studying in high school or college is going to determine your future. All right. I have two degrees in languages and philosophy. And so even for a business background, that's highly unusual. Now, the one thing that I also have is a lot of math, right? I didn't study economics or business, but I took math up through multivariable calculus at Princeton. And so after that, business math is not really that hard. So that's the one thing that I did have that's been very helpful. But I would say, you know, don't go to college being so determined about what you want to study or what you're going to do that you're not open to where your interests may lead you, because there really isn't any way to tell what you're going to end up doing. And then also, I would say, you know, having attended an elite school, with a lot of friends who've attended elite schools, both from St. Mark's and elsewhere, not having a degree from an elite school does not even come close to sealing your fate. You know, you need to go somewhere that you enjoy, where you can study what you're interested in. And, you know, in fact, before we got on the call, I was just reading another article from The Atlantic about college admissions and what a mess it is today. And I think people just worry way too much about this.
Okay. If you were to go back in time, is there another career you would have pursued or another path to where you are now?
Yeah, I actually think I would have gone to law school. I mean, even now, I'm genuinely interested in the law and in philosophy of law. At the nonfiction publishing company that I helped start, constitutional law was a particular area of focus for us. We published a number of books on that, for which I was the editor. When I was taking my philosophy degree, I also studied a lot of political theory and legal theory. And so I think if I was going to do something differently, I would have gone to law school. Now, that said, I understand that a lot of people go to law school because they don't know what to do with themselves. And I don't recommend that, but I think it would have fit my intellectual interests and aptitudes pretty well. And I would do that if I were 30 years younger.
Earlier, you were talking about how, like, looking back now on the last, like, 30 years or so, you don't really understand, like, how all of it worked out.
Right.
So I'm sure you were, like, at most of the steps of the way, like, skeptical about the future in your career. So how did everything fall into place?
Yeah, well, so this is very interesting. My way of thinking about this was quite influenced by my mother, who started off as an opera singer and ended up as city attorney of Dallas. So, you know, one thing that I learned from her is that, you know, your focus should be on making a good judgment about the situation that is before you. And so that, I mean, that's what I would say looking back. You know, I tried, not always successfully, as I think I illustrated earlier, but that's how I've tried to approach things, because it is, there's really no way to tell how things are going to turn out. I think about sort of 10-year increments of my life, and, you know, in high school, I never would have guessed what I would be doing 10 years after high school. At that point, 10 years after high school, I wouldn't have guessed what I would be doing 10 years after that, and so on and so on. And so, you know, that's what I would say, is like, focus on making good decisions in the moment, and don't worry too much about the future, because there's so much we don't control.
Yes, you were earlier hitting upon, like, the best decision you've made and the worst decision you've made. Mm-hmm. Could you just elaborate on those a little bit more?
Well, I mean, the best decision I made was marrying my wife. You know, it's very interesting, actually. You know, I don't know if you've seen these two best-selling books by this psychologist, actually from Princeton, named Daniel Kahneman. One's called Thinking Fast and Slow, which is about 10 years old. The other one's called Noise. It came out last fall. And part of what he does in these books is just go through in painful detail all of the psychological and economic literature on how flawed human judgment is. And if you read these books, like, you will recognize all the stuff that you do that leads to very bad decisions. And I reread these books recently for a project I'm working on, and I thought to myself, I really wish these had been around when I was in high school, because I would have made a lot better decisions, or I don't know, maybe different bad decisions. Who knows? So I, you know, I would say that I don't know that I have too much to add to what I've already said, but just to try to be self-reflective and think about, you know, given my current circumstances, what's really the wise thing for me to do? And not to delay decisions that need to be made, but also not to make decisions too soon, like deciding in high school, I'm definitely going to medical school, or I'm definitely going to law school, and no matter what happens, I'm going to do that. Well, that's probably not a good idea.
This next section is going to be like understanding a little bit more about your job and what it entails. So what exactly does consulting entail, and what made you choose to start your own firm or consulting firm over joining another?
Yeah, well, so there are lots of different kinds of consultants, and a lot of them specialize in some particular area. So like my brother-in-law is an IT consultant, and he has a very defined specialty in the software that large retail chains use to manage their business. So he works for a variety of different companies at different times. But that's the specific thing that he is, you know, very much an expert. If you think about a firm like one of the big three firms, McKinsey, Bain, Boston Consulting Group, so those firms are very large, and they will have a number of technical and industry experts that are part of the firm, but supervised by partners who are strategy and general management consultants. And so that's the kind of consultant I am. I'm a strategy and general management consultant. So the difference in the kind of consulting I do is that strategy, unlike IT or human resources or supply chain, strategy is not a function. It's the point of view about the organization that unites all the functions together so that they become more than the sum of their parts, and they're not just separate things running independently within the same organization. And then my management work is usually with chief executives or C-level executives and boards. And again, that's consulting on how to manage the organization as a whole, how to properly identify problems, how to approach solving them, how to make your board of directors effective, how to have good relations with them. So the work I do is something that affects the overall organization at the most general level. So as I mentioned earlier, my two main tasks in an engagement are to help the organization identify what its problem, real problem actually is, and then to teach the executives in that organization how to address that problem so that in pretty short order, they don't need a consultant anymore. They now understand what the difficulty is, and they can take care of it themselves from then on. It's not part of my business model to have clients on the hook for year after year after year. The longest consultation I will do is probably about 2 years. Most of them were more like 6 months to a year. Because at that point, the client is either going to do, they're either going to do what we talked about or they're not going to do it. And either way, they don't need me anymore. So is that clear enough? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's good. What do you find yourself doing every day, like from day to day?
Well, I read a lot of management, strategy and management literature. And then beyond that, I actually read a great deal of history and foreign policy as well, because there are a lot of management and strategy lessons there also. And then, of course, since I'm a solo practitioner, I have to do some marketing every day. I have a twice weekly podcast on strategy and management that I produce, so that takes up a fair amount of my time. And then there's client calls and working with clients. That takes up most of my time.
How has COVID changed the way you operate, and do you expect it to change you expect these changes to stay for good?
For the worst. Well, I mean, I will have to say that COVID was not great for consultants, because when the economy contracts and organizations are looking to cut expenses, one of the first things that they do is cut back on their outside help. So, you know, I will not be the only one who tells you that COVID didn't do my business any particular good in terms of the volume of the business. I will say, though, that one thing that I do think is good is that has helped me personally is that before the lockdown, I was traveling so much that I was starting to kind of generally feel not that great, because I wouldn't really recover from one trip before the next one. And I used to think to myself as I was sitting in a hotel room somewhere, you know, is this really necessary? You know? I mean, do I really have to be here for this and take time away from my family? And so I would have to say that even since things have opened up a little bit, I think other people have kind of caught on to this idea, and there is far less demand for my physical presence than there was before. And I handle a great deal of it over Zoom, just like this. And I have to say that, you know, to my surprise, I have found that at least the people I work with are very satisfied to do things by video conference. I think they like being able to see people, but apart from that, there isn't as great a demand that you be present with them. And I think that just generally that's saving professionals a lot of time, stress on their personal lives, and physical health. And so that part of it, I think, is very good.
Okay. Does consulting stay fresh for you, and are you still interested in it after?
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, it definitely does. Because the thing about the kind of consulting I do, the strategy and management problems, is they're always different. Problems are similar, but no two organizations are exactly alike. And so I find that, yes, it is always fresh for me. And I'm always learning. I'm always learning new things. Like recently, you know, I did attend a conference of an organization where I knew absolutely no one in a field that I was not familiar with, and it was a really rewarding experience that will help me in the future. So there's always more to learn, and the variety of problems I deal with is really so wide. I won't see everything, you know, before I'm dead. So it does stay very fresh for me.
Earlier, you were talking about work-life balance, how, like, when you're traveling, you didn't get to spend as much time with your family. So what is your take on that topic? And what do you think is, like, the ideal type of work-life balance?
The thing is, this is something where I would say there are guidelines, but no rules. All right. You and your spouse or whatever family you live with have to be sort of united in your general point of view about this, because what's a perfectly fine amount of time for people to be away in some families would be very bad in others. I will say that spending enough time with my family, I always try to keep that foremost in my mind. In fact, I've been told by business colleagues that it's really no fun to travel with me on business, because I go just for what exactly we have to do for business, and then I leave. So anyway, I would just say that the main thing I think would be to just make sure you're really in tune with your spouse and your family, because that is your first responsibility, and it's worth sacrificing some measure of professional success in order to have a good family life. And I mean, just to give you a specific example of, you know, about a month before our third child was born, I was getting ready to go away for a week on a business trip. And one evening, my wife said to me, you know, I just feel overwhelmingly like you should not go on this trip. I think you need to stay home. And she said, I really believe this. And so I, you know, basically one day I scrapped the trip. 2 days later, she went into premature labor. Right. So you know, it's this is just something where, you know, you want to make sure that you're not imposing on your family with your work and professional life.
Something else a lot of people are considering right now is the time and money you put into your education and then how much you get out in your professional life.
Right.
Does that seem to be worth it for the world of consulting?
Well, you know, I mean, since I didn't go to business school, you know, I can't answer that question. I mean, what I would say is that I had over 30 years, I have not seen a lot of evidence that an MBA is essential or in some cases even desirable for a business career. Now, I think that's probably influenced by my having worked for startups or early stage organizations. And then because of the kind of consulting I do, because a lot of business education is basically kind of tool matching, right? You're taught analysis, you analyze the situation, business school gives you these tools, you find the tool that goes with the situation, and then you apply that tool. And of course, there are a lot of situations in which that can be a good approach for startups and strategy. It's not. Because the working in enterprises like that is often a kind of creative or imaginative and, you know, in some sense, even in my opinion, kind of philosophical exercise where you're trying to look sort of deeply into the nature of things and think about what might be in the future, right? And all data is from the past. All tools were developed in the past. And so, in my opinion, it's not that useful for it. You know, thinking about law school, for instance, I think that at the point at which I might have gone to law school, going into debt for that would have been okay. Now, when young people ask me whether they should go into debt for law school, I said, if you can go to a top five law school and be in the top third of your class, fine. Otherwise, and, you know, I still know a lot of lawyers, and when I have said this kind of thing to them, no one has said that that's totally wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, one of my daughters is interested in medical school and is right now, she's in a freshman in college and is right now kind of coming to terms with how long medical education is now for any kind of specialty, right? I mean, as you know, not just the 4 years of medical school, but internship, residency, usually some kind of fellowship after that, so that you're not really embarking on your medical career until you're close to 40, you know, and so I think people have to be very careful. But I would say even at the undergraduate level, you know, if you have to go into a lot of debt to go to a particular college, I just really question whether it's worth it, right? I was my couple of years ago when that whole college admissions scandal broke, you know, my parents and I were talking and I said, well, I think we can agree, Princeton, great experience. Not worth federal prison.
Yeah.
and not worth going into debt either. I mean, I was one of only two children. My sister is considerably younger than I am. So my parents were able to just pay the tuition. You know, I mean, we didn't go on vacation for a long time, but you know, they were able to pay without taking on any additional debt. And so that was fine. You know, now to leave college with $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in debt, I really think you have to ask whether it's worth it.
One factor to consider when choosing a job, not the most important one, but nonetheless a factor to consider, is compensation. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you're talking about doctors, how they invest like 11 years or more, but then they're compensated pretty well after that. So without going into specifics, how would you say consulting compensates?
Oh, consulting can be extremely lucrative. I mean, one thing about having my own firm is I keep all the money. So they're part. I mean, it's tough because I don't have a marketing staff. On the other hand, everything I earn is mine. But if you go to work for one of the major consulting firms, I mean, if you stay there for 4, 5, 6 years and you end up being a director or a partner, you know, you'll be making a very nice salary. And then, oftentimes for people who start up in consulting really young, they kind of do the reverse of what I did. They consult young and then go become an executive at an organization afterwards. And, you know, again, that's, I mean, McKinsey is a CEO factory. A lot of their people go on to be CEOs. But yeah, so you know, I think that, again, though, I would have to say that I think the economy is really different now than when I graduated from college. And so I do hesitate a little bit to give advice to younger people. I mean, just to take the example of the medical profession, which you mentioned, I think that that is not nearly as lucrative as it was when I was your age. And, you know, the training is longer and the compensation is less. So it's just a very different economy now.
So you mentioned before that, like, even in the consulting world, you don't necessarily need an MBA or it's not even like required.
Right.
Do you find that the college degree that people have in your field are important to the job they do or important to getting a job?
In my opinion, they're not. I've been a hiring manager for 25 years. The particular degree that somebody has never made a difference to me. Undergraduate degree, that is, except that there are certain things that I think are not really appropriate for undergraduate study. And they're basically professional degrees like business or journalism, communications, things like that. I don't really consider those a worthwhile use of the undergraduate years. Those are better suited for graduate or explicitly professional programs. So for instance, when I was hiring for the publishing company I ran, we never hired people with undergraduate degrees in journalism because they had never really studied a real discipline. And they actually did not know that much about the English language. For instance, I think it's more a question of where you go to school and whether the thing that you're studying is known to be good at that school. But I always encourage people to study something that has been traditionally considered a real actually a lot more likely to learn the habits of thought and research and analysis and written and verbal expression through a real discipline than you will through something that's basically a training program.
Sort of as an extension question off of that one, what qualities, skills, or attributes do you look for in a person that you're trying to hire, whether it was for that publishing company
first of all, I mean, speaking of research, right? So I look for somebody who actually knows comes to an interview knowing something about the organization or who, say, in their cover letter written that in terms of their genuine interest in working for this kind of organization and maybe the, you know, my organization in particular. So I look for somebody who's actually given some thought to it. Another thing I look for, which is harder to gauge, is this, the way I phrase this is somebody who's willing to take initiative while still cooperating with the leadership of the organization. And so if you think about that in terms of an organization's strategy, so one of the things that strategy does for the individuals that work for an organization, it helps them make choices in their individual work that fit with what the organization wants overall, right? Because you as an executive, you don't want to have to think of everything. I've had jobs where that was true, and it's exhausting, right, to have people coming and asking about every little thing they want to do. On the other hand, you don't want people to say, well, I'm just going to do whatever I want, right? And so I look for that capacity, the desire to understand what the overall aims of the organization are, a desire to understand how that person's work fits into those overall aims, but also a desire to take initiative and not to wait around to be told what to do and how to do it. The one qualifier for that is you have to be working for somebody who's not going to punish you for honest mistakes, right? Which often happens, right? But I never punished anyone for an honest mistake. I always preferred employees who kind of went a little bit too far and had to be reined in gently than people that I was always having to wonder, you know, what are they up to today? Probably nothing useful, right?
So we've all heard the cliche, follow your passion in the career. But there's also, like, you know, like things that have an actual career that you need to think about. How do you balance the two ways of thinking about it?
Yeah, well, the idea of following your passion is a really modern idea. I mean, traditionally, the passions have been considered the things that lead you astray, right? What I tell people to do is to I mean, as I said before, to follow your interests and your curiosity and to be open to learning new things. So I'll just give you an example from my own career. When I helped start the publishing company, I was just going to be the editor-in-chief. So I was going to work on the books, you know, just editing the books, producing the books, marketing them only. But fairly early on, in the first couple of years, it became evident that the person that we had hired to manage our marketing and our finance was really not equal to the task. And so there was a particular summer when I had to make the decision, you know, am I going to insist on doing only the job that I was here to do, the books, or am I going to teach myself about finance and accounting so that we can really get a handle on what's going on in this business? I chose the latter. But I knew I would be able to do that because, as I mentioned earlier, I'd had very advanced math. And, you know, I mean, once you're up into doing calculus, like I said, business math, it's just, there's very little that is challenging comparatively, right? And so I basically taught myself corporate finance. And, you know, I got a book and read it. I worked on tests. Sorry, my dog is here at my feet demanding lunch. I'm just going to give him a little affirmation there. I don't think I would have chosen to do that if I hadn't thought it was necessary. On the other hand, it turned out that I was really interested in this and really good at it. And so, you know, if I just followed my passion, you know, I guess I would have just read books all day, and then there would have been no business, right? Because, you know, nobody was paying attention to this other stuff. So this is another thing I learned from my parents, which is that even in what appears to be on its face or at the beginning, you know, fairly dull work, there's always something about it that you can find that's interesting or that you can make interesting. And so this is kind of what I tell people about. I mean, your passions are basically untutored, and you don't want to follow them because there's often nothing more to them than kind of your transitory mood, and if that's not a good basis for deciding what you should be doing.
What role does networking play in your job, or how important do you think it is? And sort of extension off of that, what steps do you take to stay ahead of your industry aside from reading lots of books?
So I think networking is very important, although, you know, we have to define what that is. I mean, for me, and I think for really, you know, any competent professional, networking is not just a tool you're using to extract goods or services or favors from other people, right? It's developing a kind of friendship that's appropriate to professional life, where you're looking for opportunities to be a mutual service to, you know, to other people. And I say this, I'm basically an introvert, but one of the things that actually, it was the alumni work at Princeton that helped me early on to kind of break out of that a little bit. Now, being an introvert, of course, doesn't mean you don't like being around other people. It just means it's tiring for you at a certain point, right? And so there's the aspect of networking that's mutual, you know, the desire to be mutually of service. Second, to go to your point, is to sort of gather information and intelligence about what's going on in your profession or in the wider world. And, you know, there are a lot of things you learn in personal encounters that you wouldn't have learned as quickly or as well, just reading the newspaper or even reading in industry journals. And then the third thing I would say is that you, part of sort of following your interests, following your curiosity, is allowing for a certain amount of serendipity in your career. And if you're not getting out and meeting people, finding out about what they're doing, attending different events, you know, if you're just sitting in your office working, you're kind of expecting the world to come to you, and that's not likely to happen. So you have to be out to just allow for strange and wonderful opportunities that you would have never have encountered in any other way. I mean, one of my biggest concerns about the COVID lockdown is that basically just shut down that part of my work life for me, is I was no longer going to events, no longer getting together with people. And so there was no allowance for positive chance in talking with people. And I was starting to get kind of worried about that when things opened up again. And last fall, I was able to attend events before. But I think it's a really necessary part of professional life, but you have to understand it in the right way.
So you've mentioned the Princeton Alumni Network. And So how has that alumni network and possibly the St. Mark's Alumni Network helped you along with your career?
Yeah, it's, well, the Princeton has definitely helped. I mean, one thing I will say that I didn't know this before I went to school there, but anyone will tell you, nobody does alumni relations like Princeton. It's absolutely phenomenal. And so I gather from friends and other members of my family that, you know, getting assistance from the network, alumni networks of other universities is probably more work than Princeton, just because they've set it up to be so active. But it has definitely helped. I mean, it's funny. I was at one point we started a communications division of the publishing company, and we were doing publicity for books published by other publishers that were similar to the ones that we published. And there was this one imprint of Penguin that I thought we would just be great for. But, you know, as you know, you've got to get in touch with people over and over and over again before they pay attention to you. So finally, this guy who ran this imprint agreed to meet with me when I was in New York, just because he realized I was going to keep asking him for a meeting until he said yes. And it was the year of my 15th Princeton reunion. And so for that year, I was wearing my Princeton ring everywhere I went. And I went into a meeting with this guy, and it turned out he graduated a year ahead of me. And we ended up basically getting all the business at this imprint. Now, you know, that wasn't the only reason. I mean, we also did a very good job, but you know, you run into, again, it's the function of serendipity, right? You run into people, you know, from a similar background, and it gives you a basis for a relationship. You know, the St. Mark's Network, I probably, if I had continued to live in Dallas, it probably would have been more useful to me. I mean, I have to say, just I lived in Dallas till I was about 40, and St. Mark's, it was always a lot of fun. I mean, I always went to stuff, but in terms of professional work, they're just, my class had only 70 people in it, and we're all in such different lines of work that there just wasn't the volume there, right? My college class had 1,000 people in it, so it's just.
How has, aside from like technology changes, how has consulting changed throughout your years as a consultant?
Well, I've only been doing consulting full time for 6 years. But one thing that I think is true of consulting in general, and also of the focus of business education in general, is it is much more driven by data analysis than any time previously. Strategy consulting as a profession is not really that old. There have only been real strategy firms around since the mid-60s, so really just during my lifetime. But I think one thing that is definitely true is that world now is divided up into about, you know, 85% of people whose focus is on crunching data for specific corporate projects, and this is true even of the big firms, and then about 15% of people who do the kind of consulting that I do, which may be grounded in data, since you have to know what's going on in your organization, but which sees the analytic part of it as really a point of departure rather than the purpose of the consulting. And I think what I've just described to you, I can think of a number of people who are far more senior and experienced than I am in the business world who would probably give you the same assessment.
Thank you, Mr. Muncy, for taking time to address these complex questions. I think we'll just sort of turn the tables around if you have any questions you want to ask us about this project or just in general.
Well, listen, it's been great talking to you all, and best of luck for the rest of your junior year and your senior year, and thanks for reaching out to me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your valuable time with this podcast. I hope you found this useful. To get notified about future episodes, please subscribe or follow Pathfinder 101 on Spotify, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Also, please visit Pathfinder101.com for more career-related information not included in the podcast. If the blog or podcast adds some value to you, please like and share it with your friends and colleagues. Thanks so much for your time, and have a great rest of your day.